This is The Guardian.
Hi, Pod fans. Football Weekly is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted to League Two after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One? FX's Welcome to Wrexham, all new Thursdays on FX. Stream on Hulu. Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. Another chance to applaud heroic failure for England fans as the Lionesses lose the World Cup final, outplayed by Bon Mati in Spain and just a little flat on the night. Imagine how good the Spanish would be if they liked their manager. Then to the Premier League, Manchester United in crisis. Ange Ball is real. Chelsea in crisis. How long do we do the perhaps they need to buy some players gags? City win this weekend's title decider. Phil Foden with his best Kevin De Bruyne impression. Brighton just keep reforming and more impressive than last time, like a beheaded worm, if that's how worms work. Everton are bad, Liverpool are okay, Brentford are good, and Nottingham Forest are just better than Sheffield United. There'll of course be no mention of Cambridge United being top of League One. There'll be your questions, and that's today's Guardian Football Weekly. On the panel today, Barry Glendenning, welcome.
Hi, Max.
Nader Manuaha, hello.
Hello, Max.
And is it still the all-new Barney Ronay, or have you... As the season starts, do you go back to old Barney Ronay? I don't know what Barney to expect today.
Hi, Max.
Okay, yeah, that's perfect. It's actually, your voice changed a bit. Like, is it Paul Cook? I don't know who he manages.
Yeah, it was a really unconvincing attempt to sound upbeat. I'm sorry. You know, when have you ever done one of those talking heads where you must have done millions? In fact, you've probably hosted them. Those things on TV where you kind of go, well, the great thing about the 90s was everyone, when I did one of those, they got someone to sit directly behind the camera grinning, like a guy just grinning with a really quite terrifying smile on his face, trying to make me, I think they do it to everyone, hopefully, trying to make you smile into the camera. Because when you smile, your voice sounds happier as well. So I'll try and do that.
Keep it smiley. Football's stupidest faces on MTV. I think I did host. Yeah, I did host something for MTV. I mean, God, if they only knew. Anyway, let's get on with this. A familiar agony after the World Cup final. Spain were just so much better than England, Barry, weren't they?
Yeah, I don't think there's any particular shame in that defeat for England. They weren't quite on it, but Spain didn't really let them be on it. They were hugely impressive, by far the better team and deserving winners. And it sort of makes a mockery of that hiding they got at the hands of Japan earlier in the tournament, which no one really saw coming and obviously proved to be a one-off aberration. I'm not sure what the atmosphere is going to be like on the plane back to Madrid or wherever, because quite obviously a sizable contingent of the Spanish side appear to absolutely despise their manager. One of the players very sadly heard that her dad died after the game, and you have that controversy over the Spanish FA president kissing Jennifer Hermoso on the mouth, which seemed to be an unwanted celebratory gesture of affection. So yeah, it could be a quite muted, weird atmosphere on that plane home to Spain. But you know, they just have better players in nearly every department. My antipathy for the English men's team is well known, but I would have been quite happy to see the Lionesses win, but they weren't good enough.
Yeah, I mean, that's right, Nadim, isn't it? There's no shame. It's a shame to lose a World Cup final, right? Because they don't come around that often, but there's no shame in losing to a team who are just better than you.
You see, this, that's not necessarily the way football works, is it? That's why we see upsets every single year. That's why we sort of tune in to watch games on the weekend, because it seems like it's going to be obvious, but you never really know. And I think for that England side, I think as a matchup standpoint, yeah, you could argue that, you know, Spain are a better team overall, but there's nothing to say that England couldn't have gotten a result, probably the same way Japan did against Spain. But things didn't necessarily go their way. And I think the influence of like Parejuelo and Bon Mati and people like this, they were just so good. It was so, so good. And the way they could sort of drive through midfield, I think on a different day, they're probably a bit more clinical as well. It's tough to just say it was done, especially when it's like 13 minutes extra, whatever it was. And then, you know, they're throwing everyone forward. You've got Millie Bright playing the big centre forward, everything, like kitchen sink, the kitchen sink down under. I was watching it firsthand in HD. It was fantastic. But as I say, it feels to me, and I guess to you as well, like the better team won on the day. And I think that'll be the disappointment that England have, because I think they could have sort of put forward a better account of themselves. And if they did that, maybe they could have won it.
I did enjoy Millie Bright in the Paul Warhurst role, Barney. I mean, should Serena Wiegmann, because like sort of universally loved, obviously won the Euros, but I don't think she got it right yesterday, did she?
Well, no, because they lost the game in the end. I mean, it's one of those things, isn't it? As I get older, I feel increasingly... I mean, obviously managers get things wrong. Managers also, as Nedim will know, see their players... look them in the eyes straight up every day in training and know absolutely everything about them, and sometimes make the right decisions based on things we don't know about. I mean, it was a slightly odd substitution situation, but I think I kind of have to trust her. I was glad to see Spain win, because the Barcelona team, that's kind of the template for that team, is absolutely sensational. I mean, they're just brilliant to watch. They remind me a bit of the sort of early Xabi Iniesta men's team. Just in terms of the idea of what they want to do with the ball and the way they keep it, it's just sensational. It's just a really good tournament. There's no point worrying about England losing the final. It was a great tournament. It worked really well. Cut through was really good. It seems pointless to even talk about it, but I will talk about one thing. During the final, I went to get some food near my house in Peckham. I was just walking down the road and I heard a really angry man's voice shouting, "Fuck off!" out of an open window, which had a George Cross hanging out of it, as England failed to score for some, you know, mischance or something like that. And
are you sure it wasn't Mary Earps's voice after she'd saved the penalty?
I did think it might have been to do with Millwall losing to Norwich at the same time, but it wasn't. There was an England flag hanging out the window, and I thought, that's cut through.
Yeah.
People that angry... you know, yelling stuff at their TVs on a Sunday lunchtime. I thought, that's great cut through. There's now probably no need to even talk about cut through anymore, which is really good progress.
Unless, of course, they were just shouting at you, Barney. mean...
That's a strong possibility as well.
Oh, look, Women's Football Weekly was released on our feed yesterday. It will be there if you haven't heard it yet. So go there for a full detailed rundown. We're going to do a special episode next Tuesday on the tournament and sort of where women's football goes from here. If we're allowed to talk about cut through, we'll be doing a cut through special next Tuesday. Paul says, who do you think will prevail ultimately in the hotly contested competition between Manchester United and Chelsea to be the new Spurs? So let's do both those games, West Ham's victory over Chelsea, and before that, Spurs over Man United. Barney, you were there for this one. You tweeted, Ange, what a guy. The vibes are good. It's all about the vibes.
Yeah, and he's amazing. I don't know what he's got. Well, I do know what he's got. He's a really good football manager and a really great guy. But I'd just love to have 1% of it. He has such charisma. Just wandering around after the game, applauding the crowd, which you often see feels a bit showy, but totally doesn't with him, because he obviously, the players love him as well. They had two 20-year-olds, a 23-year-old in that team, and they were their best players. I'm not totally sure about all of the new signings. Van de Ven, it might take a while for him to get used to the Premier League. He looked a little bit lacking in sort of athleticism at times, but Destiny at left back, my God, what a player he is. I mean, he is just fearless. He's brilliant. He's going to be such a fan favourite, and he's got a manager who's just going to let him make mistakes, I feel, even though he may not make mistakes. But it's quite hard to play that rampaging role in the team that doesn't keep the ball all the time. You know, you're constantly making decisions of, am I in the right space? How do I cover the ground behind me? You know, it's a bit easier to be João Cancelo when your team has the ball a lot. But he was brilliant. You know, he's 20, so confident. Saar was great in midfield as well. And it's just, I feel like Tottenham have accidentally hired the right manager. By accident, they've got someone who will make them feel happier. Because the idea that they should be winning things all the time always seemed a bit odd. Do they need a super stadium? Probably not. Spurs is about having some nice occasions and some really great players and some nice days and losing some other games and just sort of feeling happy with themselves. And that was how that felt. Obviously, it helped that they were playing Manchester United, who, you know, there's something really quite stuck at the heart of that team, which Ten Hag still hasn't been able to process. And they started well and just didn't really go anywhere. But it was Spurs day, and they're going to be fun to watch, which is just such a sort of nice thing to say after the last three seasons.
Yeah. A guy called Jim replied to your tweet saying, Barney, he's going to win them the league. I've been watching that man for two decades. It's like saying you've seen a UFO on a fishing trip. But I swear to God, this man is the real deal. And it is Nadim. Okay, that starting 11 is quite different to an 11 that Conte was using. But he's to completely change the style of a football team in sort of a pre-season and a couple of games, it's really impressive.
Yeah, it is very, very impressive. But I've seen the work that managers put in pre-season. Like, they'll get you to do things over and over and over. They want you to truly understand why you're doing what you're doing. And you can see that the players that they have, they are buying into that. I don't think they're near their sort of final form in terms of really understanding and trusting it just yet. I think, as Barney was saying, like, you know, certain people will build into it in time. But it is nice. Like, it's like the exact opposite of what we've seen for the last few years. And, it could work. But then in the same breath, not to pour water on it like I'm about to. But I know there's some people who aren't XG pervs. But, like, last week, Brentford was higher than Spurs's. And this week, United's was higher than Spurs's as well. United on a different day probably score, say, the Fernandez header, the Anthony one where it hits the post. So for as bad as United were, relatively speaking, they still, on a different day, could have gotten something from the game. But just from a pure playing standpoint, yes, I will be watching more Spurs games this year, something I never thought I would say. But then also, I like it. Like, a team that loses their star, and so as such, the sky should be falling in. All of a sudden, they're like, they're fine. It's funny how football works, isn't it?
Nathan's right, Barry. On a different day, United win or definitely score. I don't know, Roy Keane, who is obviously great entertainment. I was more entertained than Manchester United after this game. Was, you know, he called them the new Spurs, and he was just so sort of bereft, wasn't he? It's a joy to watch a sort of furious and a sort of wistful Roy Keane.
Well, it's more I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed vibe, I think. But yeah, they could have scored. They could have had a penalty. I mean, Bruno Fernandes was very exercised about that Garnacho shot that struck the hand of Romero, and I don't think anyone would have... I've seen them given, and it certainly would have been no less ridiculous than the penalty that was given against Lewis Dunk last weekend, which is now my benchmark for what constitutes a handball. So if that's a handball, then this certainly was as well. And then, obviously, yeah, they hit the post. But they're very easy to play through, and we saw that when they got beaten by Wolves, or not beaten, sorry, but in the game...
Well, they won against Wolves.
Yeah, sorry. When they should have got beaten by Wolves, but somehow won the game. And we saw it again against Tottenham. Papissar and Bissouma just boss midfield. James Maddison was very good as well. And the way Spurs got the players forward, it was just very easy for them.
Yeah, I was surprised. Were you surprised, Barney, that Ten Hag kept that midfield? Like, Fernandes, Mount and Casemiro, it may work. But it hasn't worked in two games, has it?
Well, I mean, they're all really good players. I'm not surprised to see them playing for Man United in midfield. It's a good point. I mean, they were really good, actually. They were good in the first half. They had 11 shots. I remember thinking, well, they really should be ahead here. But I kind of think I expect that from Man United with the quality of players they've got and the money and resources the club has. But it was the fact that they just sort of disappeared in the second half. And it was so... not easy, but, you know, Spurs were able to overturn that momentum that just felt a little bit sickly. Like, I think those players in the field would be fine because they're really good players. And I know people, Mason Mount seems to be a player that Manchester's managers really like and fans don't get. And I think it's probably to do with the fact that he's very good at taking on information and really good at understanding the game plan and all the rest of it, and things that you don't really see so much on the pitch. And if you can't make them work together, I mean, they're brilliant players. Bruno Fernandes is a brilliant footballer, annoying as he may be. His record with the club is, he's not the problem there. I'm sure they can make that work.
Do you agree with that, Adam?
Am I sure?
Well, okay, maybe I'm not sure. Okay, I'm not sure. I think maybe they can make it work.
No, I think the points he's made about, say, Mason Mount taking on information and so on, yeah, that's very much there. And I think we need to look back to, say, a year ago with Casemiro. He had a really slow start again. Maybe he'll grow out of that, or maybe this is who he is now. But I think if he does manage to grow out of it, then yes, they'll get better. I think when they're playing Hoyland through the middle and you've got Rashford out wide and all this stuff and it starts to look familiar and everyone's in a place where they're happy, then great. But for now, you know, the more footage you show of people where your team doesn't look too good, the more encouragement the next team gets when they play against you. So I think they need to address that sooner than later. Otherwise, I think people will really be going straight down their throats.
Can I ask you a question, Nedim? Sorry.
Of course you can.
As an ex-pro, as someone who plays in an era that I remember really well, there used to be this thing in football where you have a matchup on the field and say your winger is, the first 5 minutes, is really killing the left back. And there'd be a thing that get the ball to him. He's that's going really well. You know, that guy's struggling. He's tired. You know, he can't stop to. But that doesn't seem to happen so much in modern football because there's more systems play. So I've watched games quite often where one player seems to have it on another player, but the team doesn't adjust. So in this game, Rashford a couple of times in the first 10 minutes went past Van de Ven really easily, just too easily. It was like, oh God, this is not an equal match. That guy looks nervous. He's nutmegged him. He's got. But nothing changed. They kept playing to this system. I find it frustrating. I'm sure, no, I'm not a Premier League manager. I'm sure there's very good reason for doing this. But in the old days, Harry Redknapp would have said, get over there, get on him, kill him. And that might have been where a goal would have come from. You adapt in game. Is that something that happens? Is that something you've noticed changing? Because it never happened again. That matchup didn't happen again the whole game. It was sort of the play.
Maybe Van de Ven made an adjustment himself. But then also, the fact you mentioned Harry Redknapp, I've got to, like, excuse my impression here. But when he was with me at QPR...
Oh, I'm looking forward to this.
When he was with me at QPR...
What I really want, Nedim, is to turn around, like, impressions of the 80s and then come back with a wig on.
One second.
And, you know,
I've not got a wig. You get the ball down and you play. Good players play. You move it left. You move it right. You move it. And then we'll be playing in the game, moving it left and right, and he doesn't like it. So we change it. Say, get it to Bobby. Knock it up to Bobby. That's Bobby Zamora for people that don't know. And that's exactly what we did. And that was like our main strategy. We'd always try and start playing. And then he's like, nah, this is making me feel a bit uneasy. Just plumping forward to the number nine. So yeah, like playing on that sort of someone's weakness, it certainly can be a thing. But I think it's more so for teams who are really probably a bit more one-dimensional, because United did create other chances as well. And I think if it's, for me, on the field, it's up to like Fernandez and Mount and other people to see that matchup's working and to keep trying to do it, because you will find yourself in certain areas. But you're right, maybe, I don't think a manager's telling someone they have to play out wide or they have to do this or they have to do that. But I think some players these days, they don't really acknowledge how much of a weakness something can be for the opposition. So they just play the game normally. But I think the best of the best, they see what's going on and they just try and maximise that opportunity, I reckon.
Chris got in touch, I think, after Kilmarnock had knocked Celtic out of the League Cup, saying, Max, I blame you for Ange leaving Celtic. I don't think I'll ever be able to forgive you for that. So not just Barca Jim. There's an increasing number of Celtic fans. Let's go to the London Stadium. West Ham 3, Chelsea 1. Peter says, is it time that Chelsea dip into the transfer market to get some new players? I'm still here for these gags, Barry. I mean, it was a brilliant win for West Ham, wasn't it?
It was. And, you know, Chelsea weren't terrible. I thought they played quite well. They looked a little bit disjointed, which you'd expect with so many new players getting used to each other. I think there was an interesting stat on Match of the Day 2 last night. David Moyes, his last 6 Premier League wins over Chelsea have been against 6 different managers. Which, I was surprised David Moyes has 6 Premier League wins against Chelsea. I thought West Ham would struggle really badly this season, but on the evidence of this performance, they should be okay. It was a really good performance from Mikel Antonio, who I thought was superb. And yeah, it was a good win and one I didn't see coming.
And actually, Nado, I'm just trying to think, for a fan, how to win a game, you know, saving a penalty from the opposition, going down to 10 men, but like sticking it out for 25 minutes or even longer, you know, and beating a rival. It's almost perfect.
Fantastic. You know what I mean? Scoring that goal at the end as well. Say everyone can start a party and everyone decided to stay. This is why you stay. This is our football club. This is who we are. This is, you know what I mean? Like, it was a great result for them. And I think it was funny, after the game, David Moyes was really bigging up Chelsea. They're such a good side. I watched them last week. They were incredible. I think he's after bonus points in the league as well. They can get one extra if the team you played against is just that much better. Yeah, it was... West Ham will be a tough matchup for a lot of teams, because they are sort of pretty physical. Did you see the stat that went up when Ward-Prowse was taking a corner about who created the most chances from set pieces? It was like Ward-Prowse at Southampton and then three West Ham players, I think it was. So he falls perfectly into a system that will put you under pressure with Antonio leading the line or whoever it may be, constantly grafting, Bowen doing the same thing, Benrahma really taking it to you. And in that stadium, when the crowd get going, it's a tough place to go. I never loved going to West Ham, to be honest.
Yeah, I wondered, Barney, if Ward-Prowse would go higher. Like, but for a team that may flirt with relegation, he's just going to get you goals from free kicks and assists like he did yesterday.
Yeah, I mean, West Ham did win a European trophy last year. I mean,
that's a good point.
He's gone to a good team. I think in a team like West Ham, subtracting Declan Rice and adding James Ward-Prowse is brilliantly effective football. A really experienced isn't necessarily a massive negative, is it? Maybe even a positive. He's not playing to go anywhere else. He's not, you know, he just knows exactly how to be in that team. But this is just great though, wasn't it? Because this is why football is still good. No matter what you chuck at it, it never breaks. Not yet anyway, because you've got a team that spent £1 billion to become worse, losing to a team with Tooting and Mitchum's Mikel Antonio, who just was fantastic and understands exactly how to play his role. And I loved watching him, and that was just great to watch.
Chelsea have a relegation six-pointer against Luton on Friday night, Barry. Their next three fixtures, Luton, Forest and Bournemouth. Luton, who actually went up the table by not playing, which is great this weekend. I mean, Luton, Forest, Bournemouth, then, you know, if nothing happens then, you know, I don't know if Maurizio Pochettino should start worrying.
Well, if Luton's ground renovations are delayed and delayed and delayed, is there a chance Luton could win the league without playing any any game, any home games? You know, those on paper should be reasonably straightforward for Chelsea, but we don't know. Who knows?
We don't know. We'll find out. As Charlie Baker, our colleague at TalkSport, says, you can end any football conversation with, "We'll see." And he's absolutely right. That'll do for part one. Part two, we'll begin at the Etihad.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome to part two of the Guardian Football Weekly. James says, not a question, but I'll be flying solo to the Bristol live show, as my friends shockingly aren't as addicted to this podcast as I am. I'm looking forward to 2 hours of vasectomy chat. Yeah, we're going on tour, starting in London on the 13th of November at the Troxy in East London. Bristol on the 14th, Manchester on the 15th, our residency in Dublin 20th and the 21st, and Brighton on the 22nd. We're just lining up the panels for each of those. We'll let you know what they are. We're live streaming the Brighton gig on the 22nd. So wherever you are on earth, you can buy a ticket. TheGuardian.com/FWTour23. Man City 1, Newcastle 0. Phil's made him like this game was all about Phil Foden and whether he can fill Kevin De Bruyne's role, albeit in a slightly different way.
Wow.
And he played really well.
There's been clamour for Phil Foden to play centrally for a long time. And it's good to see him doing it. I think he tried to do it in the midweek game in the Super Cup and it wasn't really to any avail. And I think it depends on the nature of the team that you play against. I think if you play against teams with a really defensive mindset, low block and close the middle and force City out wide, then it almost seems like he's a waste in there because he can't go and affect the game. But in other games where he can get his foot on it, he can be dynamic with his runs, can be looking for the pass. He's so good. Like, I think because of how last season went, I like forget that he's like Wonder Boy. And being someone, you know, who supports City, who came through the academy, like he's the guy. He's so good. And he's the way he controls the ball. It feels like, here's an old school reference to people. Do you remember when you used to have those little training aids where you like attach something to your ankle and the ball's on a string and it never leaves a certain
radius? I bought one in COVID just to play on my own.
Yeah, like that's how he sort of like controls the ball. It's never too far in front of him. Never. Like he's always just got it literally on a string. So he's I'm really happy for him. I think he was really frustrated last season, given the fact that when push came to shove, he was not one of the first names that was on that team sheet, where years before he had been. So he's in there, obviously at the expense of, say, De Bruyne, who could be out for a long time now. But he's looking good. He's looking confident, looking healthy. And yeah, I like it. I think he's going to do well this season.
I mean, that's an interesting point. I mean, we were talking sort of ridiculously about, you know, making decisions on the first two games. But like over a season, Foden, Barney didn't have that brilliant season. So then you start thinking, is he in Pep's plans? Is this the end of him at, you know, insert, you know, top level club, which is obviously ridiculous given his talent.
Yeah, I don't think Guardiola thinks like that as well. He's just totally ruthless on the next game. So how do we win? People do drop out of that team for a while and then come back when he needs them. He loves Phil Foden. I mean, Foden is totally key to that whole thing. But again, I don't think it's an emotional thing. But he doesn't know how good he is. And even though Foden wasn't a main player, I don't think of him playing a lot last season. He did still have a lot of, you know, just on the numbers, there were a lot of goals and goal involvements. He still played quite a key part. And they did win the treble. So something went right there. Seemed to be some good decisions made along the way. The thing I took from this game was just the, that City were obviously tired, few injuries, and to win that game while just keeping those very good Newcastle team at arm's reach. That's why they were so pleased at the end, because that's the sort of game where you just put the points in your back pocket and it just feels good. That's, we've done the right thing there. We don't need to ever think about that again. 3 points, fine. Have a rest, move on. And also the sadness of seeing a seated Jason Tindall, which I hadn't seen yet. And it just, he was still manic. He was still doing stuff with pads and iPads and angry, but he was seated. It was kind of like someone had shaved Aslan's mane. Just very, very sad to see. I hope he still feels okay, that he's still having the influence he obviously wants to have.
Is it the rule that the manager can only stand there, only one person can? Like, could Eddie Howe sit down for 20 minutes to give Tindall, to sort of set him free?
Only one member of coaching staff can stand at the front of the technical area. But should he wish to, Jason can stand at the back of the technical area. So he doesn't have to be seated.
How clearly defined is the back of the... Because at West Ham, they've got that enormous thing. It's like the size of a football pitch. And then at Chelsea, they've got 3 metres.
Yeah.
Where can he stand?
I think he's not allowed to join Eddie in the middle of or at the front of the technical area. It's like an Irish teenage school disco. There has to be a certain amount of space between them. So no... Nothing untoward can happen. Leave room for the Holy Spirit. That's what the nuns would have said, Barney.
But this is like Dirty Dancing, isn't it? So we could see a sort of old Morse tossed aside, the liberation of the early 60s as Jason comes leaping out, cartwheeling into the arms of his manager again. But I kind of, it was weird the way he was always stood next to Eddie Howe and getting involved in the kind of interactions. I like a single, crisp, clean, clear optic of one manager pointing and shouting. That feels good.
Yeah, I also like an assistant manager to be very short. Like, is it Jesus Perez, the Pochettino's?
Sammy Lee.
I think that's really, I like that. You know, that is a combination I like. Is it always good cop, bad cop, Nadim? I mean, is the manager always really tough and the assistant manager's really nice?
Not always, no. I think because there's more coaching staff as well. So it might be the assistant to the assistant that you sort of speak to now. Some is like the guy who, if the manager has a true, true sidekick, you can barely even access him sometimes. But then there's that other person that has to go and put the cones out. You know, that guy who will pretend to be, oh, you know, how are you guys feeling? You guys okay? You all a bit tired? Like, yeah, I'm tired. Next thing you drop for the weekend because he's told the manager that you don't have the right mindset. But yeah, there's so many people that you can connect with. But I wouldn't necessarily say the assistant manager is the one who you go to because he's just that little bit too close to the manager. So yeah, it's not always good cop, bad cop. It's just those cops over there and me over here just like trying to do a training drill.
Wolves won, Brighton 4. Brighton, again, Barry, sold a load of their best players. They've won their first two games 4-1, the top of the league.
Yeah, and hugely impressive. Wonderful goal from Kairo Mitoma.
Oh, amazing.
Who famously did a thesis in university on dribbling. And I think part of that thesis included him wearing a GoPro while dribbling. And I wish he'd been wearing one around his head for that goal against Wolves, because of the way, you know, he cut inside and then he kept enough pace in reserve to be able to accelerate between the defenders and then a very composed finish. But Brighton are just a hugely impressive outfit, and Wolves, yeah, they already look like they're going to struggle this season. They're missing chances, not really getting in the penalty area. As well, actually, Mitoma, when he set up the goal for Estupinan, I don't know how he didn't break his ankle. The way he, like, chopped that ball back, I thought I was going to hear a snap of his ankle bone. But, yeah, it was a brilliant performance from Brighton.
In his thesis, the thing he noticed was that people, the best dribblers, didn't look at the ball. They were just looking around the whole time. Which is a totally ridiculous level of football. I mean, surely...
Well, I remember doing an interview with Pat Nevin once, and he always said, you know, why would you need to look at the ball? You know where the ball is. So you keep your head up so you can look around. If you're looking at the ball, then you can't see who's available to pass it to or cross to.
I mean, only one of us has scored an amazing dribbled goal.
Oh, you want to tell you how I did it?
Were you looking at the ball?
I wonder if you were, were you looking at the ball?
Oh my gosh. Do you know what? It's a mix, because at some point, like, you do kind of need to look at the ball, even if it's in your periphery, but it's more so reading the shapes of those around you. Like, I'm not, you know, that guy that people
are. You're making it sound like you scored a lot of these goals, Ned. We know it
in training, I scored a lot. Yeah. In training, I scored a lot of these goals. But same with, like, Mitoma and other people like that. They're very good at reading your body shape and body language. If you look like you're going to go down the line, they'll make a last-minute adjustment. But if you're just looking solely at the ball, you can't really see what they're going to do. And I think it's like, I'm going to mention a name which maybe you haven't said in a while, but because it's this podcast, maybe you have. Back in the day, Steve Guppy, step over, down the channel, cross coming in. You know, that it doesn't matter if there's a defender there, that's the move. Whereas these days, with some of the best dribblers, as I say, they're reading you. They're taking little touches and waiting to see when you're going to bite. And they're either going to go the opposite way or they're going to try and fake you out. You know what I mean? So there's more, in my opinion, there's more of an art to it now. Because as I say, you don't know what they're going to do because they don't have signature moves. They just have the ability to get past you based on the way that they can manipulate your weight to go one way or the other. And that will come from watching you as opposed to just staring at the ball.
I remember reading a description of Harry Redknapp as a player. In an old football book, and Harry was a winger, and apparently he had one move where he would toe poke. He was famous for his toe poke and run. He would toe poke the ball past the fullback and run because he had very good acceleration. And his entire career, every game was based on replicating that enough times that it would occasionally, in the end, work. He was like Stanley Matthews, but without the famous body swerve.
I think that was Kevin Kilbane's signature move as well,
without the acceleration. For Kevin, was that too harsh? We've been very harsh on the playing careers of Kilbane, Guppy, and Redknapp there in one fell swoop.
Whatever works
on paper, Barney. Like, Brighton don't look great. Like, you look at that team and you sort of think, well, that back four
really? Do you?
Well, maybe I'm just completely underestimating Webster and Dunk and James Milner and sort of Pascal Gross and Billy Gilmore. Look, they're good.
What paper are you looking at though? Are you looking at have they played for Man United, or are you looking at the numbers of their performances in the Premier League?
Not sure what I'm looking at. I'm just saying it's my...
I think they are really good. Like, did you see Enciso's pass for the I think the second?
Yeah, amazing.
I mean, he is so good. He's about 18 or 19, and that was just so perfectly done. I mean, he's a really, really good player. I think we can accept they're good now, can't we?
Right. Yeah.
Did you see Mateus Nunes' red card as well? The 90th minute, you're 4-1 down, and he was doing like, it was like Roadhouse, another Patrick Swayze vehicle. You're just piling up the bodies. Like, how was he expecting to walk off the field? They'd gone, absolutely gone. You know, the manager must be furious.
Solly March, a couple of goals for him, is a wonderful player. Southgate was there to watch him. Perhaps he'll get on that plane soon. Villa 4, Everton 0. I think my favourite moment of the weekend was Jordan Pickford trying to claim to the referee that he hadn't caught Ollie Watkins, but hobbling towards the ref a bit like the knight from the Holy Grail, because he sort of totally knacked himself, but was still trying to say, I haven't caught him. Nadum, Everton are not, they're not great at this stage. I don't need at this stage, I guess. They're just not great.
Okay, so to add a bit more balance, the game last week, it was like, I think they should have scored. Like, and the biggest problem is, you know, their inability to score. This week, obviously, correct, they didn't score again, but then also they were like gifting goals to Villa. And it's a good Villa side. You know, going to Villa Park will be a tough game for all the teams to go there this season. But when both sides of the game aren't going well, especially this early when you've had like 6 weeks to practice it and a previous like 6 weeks to try and forget about the season before, it just feels like this is just rolled over into the next season, and that's not what you want at all. And when your fans are leaving early after the first game of the first away game of the season, it's not, I imagine the mood in the camp isn't great. And you just sort of wonder whether, can your confidence be low basically 8 days into a season? Can it be? Because it kind of looked that way for some of those guys, but they're not, you know, I was speaking about this yesterday. They're not a bad side. They're not a bad side. But, you know, when the striker comes back and he's been injured and all of a sudden his face is just a mess, so he's got to come off. And then I think Iwobi got injured as well. And then you're just conceding right, left and centre. The next thing, the highlight that starts with you having a throw-in and then 5 seconds later, someone's running through one-on-one and you go, like, this is so, like, that's Ashley Young. He's such a good player, such a good guy. He's been playing since, you know, like, I don't know, 20 years. He's been playing 20 years. He's probably never done that in his career. But all of a sudden, he's caught that sort of funk that existed within the team for this game. But I think they'll be better. I don't know if they'll be all right, but I'm 100% sure that they can get better and this isn't their level. But they just need to figure out these mistakes before it just ends up they're in a place where they're just getting laughed at, basically.
Poor old Dominic Calvert-Lewin looked quite like a hamster, didn't he? I mean, I hope he's all right. It was a sort of terrible misfortune that he's had, and he's such a good player if he can be fit. Sean Dyche, Barry, said, I could have taken the whole team off at half time, which seems like something from Sean Dyche bingo, and would be nice if managers got the option to do that once a season to just change change all 11.
No. The problem with that, it's all well and good saying it, but there are also a lot of managers who look at their bench and say, nah, I don't want you out there either. I think what they're looking for is just a complete forfeit of the game.
But Barry, how do they rectify this? It seems too early to be saying things like that. Well, I was about to say, on paper, they look quite good, but they don't look as good as Brighton. It's a different paper.
They already resemble a team whose main tactic for staying up is going to be really hoping really hard that three teams are worse than they are. And that's kind of what's kept them up in the past two seasons. You know, some awful mistakes. Their defending was diabolical. Dominic Calvert-Lewin came back in, and then, you know, if he didn't have bad luck, he'd have no luck at all. And I think what's worrying on a number of levels is Alex Iwobi went off injured with what looks like it might be a bad one. And I think if they lose him, they're screwed. And I think if you're that reliant on someone like, with the greatest respect, Alex Iwobi, then you're already in trouble. He's a decent player, but I think he would be a terrible loss for them. You know, that performance was absolutely dismal.
And Villa are good, Barney. I mean, like, they've had to cope with Tyrone Mings and Buendia going out. I mean, obviously, they got hammered by Newcastle, then they hammered Everton, and presumably the real Aston Villa is sort of somewhere in between those two.
I guess so. I mean, they've got a really good manager who's probably a bit underrated in this country because things weren't good at Arsenal, but... You know, that guy really, he's in Spain, they consider him one of the greatest managers in the world because of his success with teams with Ville in their name. So he's obviously hit a rich seam there as well. They look totally happy to be doing what he's asking them to do. And he seems to be at a club where it's just the right level for the players to totally buy into his messages. And they're really fun to watch.
All right, that'll do for part two. Part three, I'll begin at Anfield.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
We'll be right back.
Welcome to part three of the Guardian Football Weekly. Liverpool 3, Bournemouth 1. So I got to match the day without knowing the scores. So I instantly presumed that Bournemouth had won this game. And then when it was 3-1 in the 62nd minute, I was waiting for this kind of extraordinary Bournemouth comeback. And then, you know, sometimes match of the day games, just there's a chance and it says full time. I was just totally bemused. I was like, Saturday's football must have been terrible.
Sorry, why did you presume Bournemouth won this game?
Because it was leading match of the day. So, you know, match that they had chosen this. And then Bournemouth took the lead. I was like, this is going to be this amazing victory. And then it sort of turned out to be I don't know if it was a routine win for Liverpool. You're obviously Bournemouth's chief watcher this season, Barry. What did you make of it?
I wouldn't say it was routine. Liverpool got off to a really bad start. Liverpool generally, and Alisson and Trent Alexander-Arnold in particular, they were very lucky not to concede in, I think it was the first minute, and then they did concede in the third. But they gradually turned things around and I suppose won quite comfortably in the end, despite being down to 10 men with Alexis McAllister being sent off for that studs up challenge on Ryan Christie, which some people seem to think was harsh. I thought it was fair enough red. I thought Bruno got away with a similar one in the Newcastle game. I can't remember who he tackled, but he didn't get sent off. McAllister did, so, you know, all we want is consistency, Jeff, etc. and so on. But, yeah, it was a decent win. Dominic Szoboszlai, absolutely top class in this game. He if he can maintain, you know, similar levels of performance on a consistent basis, Liverpool got themselves a real player there, you'd have to say.
He's wonderful, Barney, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he looks a really good player. He seems like a very happy, handsome, nice young man as well. But again, it's only two games into the season and Premier League is so grueling, especially playing midfield. You know, it's really a hard... we have seen people look quite good in opening games. He's young. I'd give him a while, you know, before piling on him in February when he's not producing the same high level against really top teams. But he does look very promising and I'm sure Jurgen Klopp understands how to sign midfielders. I thought the McAllister sending off was a bit harsh just because I thought referees were trying to project a kind of, we're not going to get bogged down in these, we're going to let it run or not send people off so much. There seems to be a cooling down with the micro handballs. There's not been any statement about that I've noticed, but they seem to have stopped giving them. And there also seems to be a move not to send people off for stuff where you might pull someone's arm and they fall over and they could have run in on goal. They seem to have cooled with that. I think there is a guidance on that. So I thought the kind of stuff that proper football men say, that's never a red card, was actually not going to be a red card. But this was seemed to belong more to the idea that anything with your studs up is dangerous and you'll get sent off for it.
Nathan, what have you made of the Caicedo to Lavia to Endo midfield drama for Liverpool?
I think it's been humbling for a lot of Liverpool fans. Really has. Because, you know, it seems like for some, they can't compute the fact that going to Chelsea might be a better move for anyone for any reason at all when you could go to Liverpool. Especially at a point where, you know, everyone can see that Liverpool have a very clear need in that position. So it's not great that you kind of were out there knowing that, of making sure people knew that you needed or you wanted these two players and they both said no. I can't remember the last time people said no to Liverpool, but they've arrived at Endo and I'm sure he was part of the group of people who they were thinking about getting. But due to the way that it's sort of been led by PR and just the general sort of narrative, it does feel like he's third choice. But he might have been, you know, he might have been someone who they value just as highly, say, a Lavia or so on. But this still feels like they may be a bit short in there, especially now that McAllister's going to be out potentially for, is it a couple of games or whatever it is. But this is football. I'm sure it's gonna G them up. And they would have been disappointed with signings in the past. But yeah, to be that open, to be the team that we're going to go and spend 100 mil when they said they'd never spend 100 mil, to then say, well, don't worry, you don't have to spend 100 mil because he's not coming. I'm sure that is humbling, but they'll be fine. I think it's 13 games unbeaten for them, continuing from last season in the Premier League. So it's not all doom and gloom from their side, I would say.
Tom says, Endo, Liverpool's new signing, wore a gum shield, my favourite football accessory since Edgar Davids' famous glasses. What are the panel's favourite, most notable accessories? I mean, any athlete in glasses, I'm a massive fan of. Huey Teep, the hurdler, that no one remembers. He was always in lane one when Colin Jackson and Tony Jarrett were in 4 and 5. I mean, Ed Mose is arguably a more famous hurdler, but I sort of can't think beyond. It's quite hard to have...
Kathy Freeman, is it Sydney 2000 Olympics when she had the full bodysuit on?
The full bodysuit.
Overhead, yeah. I remember that one.
Yeah. That's, do you like a footballer in that? It'd be quite nice.
Maybe. You never know.
It's quite hard to have accessories, isn't it? You know, even at my level.
Yeah,
you have to take earrings. I have to take all my earrings off, and my BA Baracus chains have to go before I step onto the field. Yes, Barney?
Do you remember that fad for having a massive smear of Vicks on the front of your shirt? And I think Robbie Fowler twinned it with a kind of nose, like a swimming nose thing to open his... I don't know why he needed that little bit more oxygen through his nostrils. Nedim, you probably played with a massive smear of Vicks on your shirt at some point.
When it was big, it was when I was younger. And I always used to wonder, like, will I ever do this? And I did it like 2-3 times. Biggest waste of time ever imagined. Like, don't copy everything you see. It's nonsense, my friend. Nonsense.
Capinosity says, with Phil Billing now simply known as Philip, what past players' rebrands have succeeded or failed? And which players could rebrand in the future? Some people suggesting, Barney, it's your fault that he's taken Billing off because he found Paperless such a disappointing nickname that he's gone straight to Philip. Fulham 0, Brentford 3. Tough day for Fulham. Losing that game, losing Mitrovic to Al Hilal for a deal that's worth about 50 million. And as you actually touched on, Nathan, no Ivan Toney, doesn't matter. And Mbeumo and Wisser have scored in both of their opening games.
Yeah, do you say it was 3-0? So that's 5 in 2 games without the second top scorer or third top scorer in the Premier League last season.
I think it's 11 in 5 games if you include the 3 at the end of last season.
Ow. They're finished. Just call it quits. Send them back to the Championship. They're not going to be able to do it. No, I think teams adapt, and they're always going to be, well, not always because we don't know how football works, but they seem like a side. They're still very well organised, but the threat's just a little bit different. Instead of having that tall striker that will pin any person on planet Earth and try and link up other people, you've got Mbeumos, you've got Vissers, you've got people just bombing forward in that sort of speed. It, like, speed gets you speed kills, and them having that threat will always make the opposition not to overcommit a bit too much. But unfortunately for Fulham, that wasn't going to be their day on Saturday. But yeah, I still like Brentford. They reached this point. I hold my hands up, Max. I've got my biases, yeah. I played for QPR. I'm not supposed to like Brentford, okay? I'm not supposed to like them. But they're decent. I think everything about the way the club runs is decent. And I wish that, like, QPR could have been like that from back then.
You'd never have got Chris Samba for, you know...
it's Chris Samba for 100 grand a week. Of course not. But it's like two clubs going in completely different directions. But one seems like it's sustainable. Whereas the other ones, it's like it's the fifth remake of the club in the last 5 years or something. But they're good, and they're like, they feel like they're a solid Premier League club and team. And I never thought I'd say that. But as I see it, I see no reason why they would be anything less. It makes perfect sense. So credit to them. Yes, I am biased. But yeah, they're really, really good.
Marco Silva was not happy with the officiating, Barry. He said there'll be over 200 yellow cards in the first 10 weeks, which sounds actually quite fun, doesn't it? But I thought Tim Ream was really unlucky, especially to get a second yellow. I wasn't even sure it was a penalty, but I'm happy for anyone to disagree with me.
Well, I couldn't figure out whether he got the second yellow for the foul in inverted commas on Wisser or for dissent after the penalty was given. I still don't know. So I can't really comment on that. I have a feeling it might have been for dissent, but I think he was entitled to complain because it looked a very, very soft penalty. I wasn't sure it was a foul. There was a way worse challenge in the Man U game. I think it was Lisandro Martinez barged into Romero, and that went unpunished. But yeah, I don't know why Ream got sent off. I thought it was very harsh. But Fulham didn't make life easy for them. So anyway, they gifted the goal to Brentford, and then the Cordova Reed hit the crossbar, and then Brentford got that soft penalty. But, you know, the worry was, and we touched on this in the pre-season pod, that Brentford would struggle without Toney, and they're showing no signs of doing that at all.
I'm all for the respect campaign, but I thought Darren Bond was quite brandishy as a referee. I thought there was a bit of pub bouncer about him. You know, I'm in control of this, and you know, out you go of the slug and lettuce, even though it doesn't seem reasonable.
You say you're up for the you like the respect campaign, but
yes, but I believe there was a but.
That's what everyone says. I believe in the respect campaign, but you are terrible, and I'm not happy about it. That's basically what you're going to say to every ref.
I have told this story before that I was yelling at a ref on a pitch in a sort of polite way. And he did say to me, I read an article you'd written in The Guardian that week about the respect campaign, which was quite a comeback. So I said, no, fair enough.
It's all fun and games until you're playing the game itself. Yeah. And then all of a sudden,
white line fever. Come on, mate. Phil says, how do the Saudis decide on Mitrovic going to Al Hilal? How do the Saudis decide who gets which player? They don't bid against each other because that would be weird. Are they trying to create even teams or better and worse teams so the top ones can rival the European teams eventually? I'd be interested in your take, Barney, on that whole, this event that had happened this summer.
It is an interesting point. I mean, it sounds like he's making a joke, but five of those teams have the same ownership, which is the Saudi investment fund. So they are essentially, why would they not be trying to balance it out? Presumably the point is to create a strong league. They're all owned by the same entity, which is essentially the Saudi state. So you'd imagine they might. If not, why not? You're spending hundreds of millions of pounds. Why don't you have some communication? Which is an odd thought. I can't stop talking about this subject, even though I don't really want to talk about it much. I sort of got in trouble at the weekend for sending a tweet about Saudis and Newcastle. But it's just one of those moments where something really strikes you. I'll tell you what I was doing, just because it makes me sound stupid. I was in Sainsbury's car park picking up a machine-cut, rubberized boot mat from the used-approved Lexus shop on eBay. It's probably the most Partridge thing I've ever done. It's almost like a parody of Partridge.
Were you wearing string driving gloves?
Of course. As I was doing that, I was listening to the radio, and they were doing a story about the fact that petrol prices have unfortunately gone up. And it was TalkSport, and they tried to tie it to sport. And they said, you know, this means football fans will have to pay more for every away trip. And for example, Newcastle United fans will now pay X amount more for a trip to here. And I kind of wondered if it was irony, because obviously what they're pointing to there is the incredible interconnectedness of all these things, in that Saudi Arabia is the world's greatest, largest single oil producer, the major part of OPEC. The reason oil prices have gone up is because there's been a managed and deliberate cut in production by Saudis. And TalkSport chose to link this to Newcastle United fans having to pay more for their petrol, which is a really clever, semi-satirical way of linking the fact that, yes, you get to enjoy this massive investment in your team, but you are in effect paying for it with your petrol prices. That's where the money comes from. It's not magic money, it can come from nowhere. And in trying to point this out, I think I may have looked a bit like I was jeering at Geordies and saying how you deserve your petrol price rises, but I really wasn't. It's just that cognitive dissonance that we have of trying to work out these very complicated things that are happening to our game, which are all highly interconnected. So there you go. People can become offended again.
Does the mat fit the Lexus?
Yeah, it's really good. You know, it's like it's a dream. I'm going for the football mats as well now. It was a trial run.
It didn't make the edit in Take Me Out when Paddy McGuinness went, let the mat meet the Lexus. It just wasn't, that never made it, did it? Nadim, you had your hand up, I mean, about 10 minutes ago, but...
Yeah, it was. It's one of those things. Did I miss the moment? Maybe I did. It's when you were talking about, say, how they decide which player goes to where. In my mind then, that took me to when I went to MLS actually, and you find out that that's the same system there. So I didn't know at the time when I went that the league or the owners can decide who signs to which club. So if a player's coming in that somebody doesn't like, they can just veto and stop the player entering the league, which I didn't know about at all. And even say someone like Messi coming in, like everyone sanctioned that. Some of these leagues that they run very differently to how we see things. And I was surprised about MLS. But yeah, that's kind of the way it is, because I've heard of players get told that, no, you can't join the league because maybe there's an issue that somebody had with someone once upon a time. So yeah, as I say, it's not to take away from the point you're making about Saudi Arabia, but MLS is very different to how a lot of people perceive it to be.
But that's very interesting. I guess it's the same thing. It's like they have a draft in US sports, and It's not just seen as a massive free-for-all. So if they're doing that in MLS, they must be doing it in the Saudi League. Why not? You know, you're trying to make an even league, I guess.
The last game, Forest 2, Sheffield United 1. We don't have a huge amount of time. So, Barry, give us a one-minute précis of what you thought of this game.
Whole minute?
Okay. Yes.
I thought Forest deserved to win. I thought they would win more comfortably than they did. Sheffield United scored a fantastic goal. Gustavo Hamer from the edge of the penalty area, curled one into the top corner. And your favourite knight, Serge Aurier, provided the two assists for Forest goalie.
Yeah, had a great game, didn't he?
And Chris Wood, who I believe isn't all that popular among Forest fans, I could be wrong on that, but he scored with a diving or sort of glancing header, as Chris Wood. You tend to associate him with more of a meaty headed goal, but he'll take anything he can get at the moment. And yeah, Forest deserving winners, but left it late.
This may be a deeply, deeply unpopular opinion. Deeply unpopular, yeah. But I think that the fact that everyone else around the world can watch English games, but we couldn't watch that game on Friday, I think that's wrong. And I think it's the Football Supporters Association that say it should stay the way that it is. But I think the world is in a different place now in 2023 than it was in the 60s when it first started. And I think that the effect that they believe it would have had then would be different to what it is today. So I find it peculiar still that literally everyone else can keep a track of what's going on real time with commentators there, because we see it in the highlight shows and so on. And I think there should be a way for people in the UK to be able to watch the games of football that they want to see, because not everyone is going to be in a position to go to a game or want to go to a game. And I think those people can be afforded the chance to watch matches of football instead of just having to see it blacked out, even though it's essentially just down the road.
I mean, that's different to the 3 p.m. blackout as well. I mean, I don't know if you think the 3 p.m. blackout shouldn't happen either.
No, that's the point, because that game was meant to be part of the 3 p.m. blackout. That's why it wasn't on TV.
It was on Friday night, wasn't it?
No, but it wasn't on TV. It wasn't on TV. They moved it, they brought it forward because they were worried about like fan safety and congestion, because I think there was a game at Trent Bridge at the same time on Saturday. So that's why they brought it forward. So that game on the game that was on TV on Friday evening was Leeds against West Brom.
Right.
Whereas the Forest game you could see after 10 p.m.
Right.
And again,
but obviously like, I could watch it.
Well, yeah, because you're one of those like foreigners, aren't you?
But
everyone else in the UK had to wait till 10. Yeah. So there you go. Maybe it's unpopular, but people, I'm sure people let us know.
Yeah. I mean, there's a difference between 3 p.m. on a Saturday. I understand EFL clubs wouldn't want that. You know, and but
you say that, Max, you say that, but why wouldn't they want that? Tell me.
Well,
again.
I think there are, you know, Cambridge play Bristol Rovers on Saturday. If Liverpool Bournemouth is on TV, I reckon some of those fans are also Liverpool fans and would watch Liverpool on TV over Cambridge v Bristol Rovers.
And by some, you mean the majority or just a few?
No, just a few, but you know, every fan counts, I guess.
I think the point is that the direction of travel is there is no shortage of football to watch on television. It's really not a problem. And anything that preserves just a little bit the human in-stadium experience, which is what the wealth and success of this game is based on, is probably a decent kind of regulation. Although
yeah,
you can always
I'm not
argue
sure.
against it.
Yeah, that like I take on board the point that you're making, but maybe it's anecdotal, but a lot of the football fans I know that want to go to a stadium want to go to a stadium and will go whether a game's on TV or it's not. So that's the point which I see. Because
how long is that going to carry on? If we undermine it, how long will that be there? Will that be there in 20 years?
Just it's the option. It's the option. And I think it's the fact that we also believe that, you know, everyone wants to be watching the Premier League games all the time. Like things itself, I don't think they're that binary. And there are times where like attendances fluctuate within Football League and say and the Premier League as well. And it's not based on whether a game's on TV. It's just whether someone actually wants to go. And I think giving people the option isn't the worst idea in the world, in my opinion. But like I say, I'm sure it's going to be an unpopular one.
No, I think it is popular. People like choice. Choice and providing things is the direction of the world. There isn't a lot of regulation. But I just think this one actually is trying to preserve something of value that's actually a source of strength that could quite easily disappear. It's really weird in this country that we still have such big attendances lower down the pyramid. And I think it's a good thing.
Finally, Joshua says, I bumped into Jonathan Wilson on the train yesterday and we had a lovely little chat. When he got off, the woman sitting next to me asked me if he was a celebrity, and I had to debate whether he was or not. I decided that he was in some circles. Would you count Wilson as a celeb? Barry?
Well, I suppose if he's being recognised by strangers on trains, then he has some celebrity cachet. The correspondent says they had a nice chat. I suspect Wilson probably didn't enjoy it because he'll have wanted to work. And this man clearly interrupted him. And now I may be doing our listener a disservice, but I'm going to go out on a limb and say Wilson would have preferred not to have been bothered.
Well, I say two things on that. Don't underestimate the intense egomaniacal amour proper of Wilson. He would have pretended not to like it, but been also, he's really famous because Ted Lasso, biggest, yes, one of the biggest shows in the world, his book was in I think the opening credits or the opening scene. Like, it's been a massive thing for him, you know, after hanging around waiting for him to write Inverting the Pyramid 2 rather than continual updates. It's just had a sort of mid-career shot in the arm. It's the Sweet Caroline, and yeah, he's the Neil Diamond of football tactics books. He's had a sudden midlife boost.
All the Ted Lasso fans who bought Inverting the Pyramid must be gutted, in the same way that my friend Nick watched Star Wars and saw Alec Guinness was in it, so then found all the Alec Guinness films in the Radio Times and was deeply disappointed that they were all they were not like Star Wars. Anyway, that'll do for today. Thanks, Barry.
You're welcome.
Cheers, Barney.
Cheers.
Thank you, Nathan.
Thank you very much.
Football Weekly is produced by Joel Grove. Our executive producer is Daniel Stevens. Got a Europod tomorrow.
This is The Guardian.